So to begin, Pastor versus State Farm, Mr. Moccio.
Good morning. May it please the court and counsel, my name is Vincent Moccio, and I represent Carol Pastor, the appellant in this case. Ms. Pastor has brought breach of contract claims against State Farm Mutual Insurance Company, and she has brought those claims as a putative class action seeking to represent all persons who had their contract similarly breached. The district court denied her motion for class certification, and Ms. Pastor comes before this court seeking a reversal of that order denying certification and a remand for further proceedings. This case involves a State Farm provision called R1 rental car insurance. What R1 does is if you rent a car, you get paid a certain amount of money to defray the cost of renting a car.
How did Ms. Pastor remember or learn that she hadn't gotten her $10, that she might have had a claim for $10 10 years ago?
How did she remember? Well,
brooding over this for the last 10 years?
No, Your Honor, she wasn't brooding over this. I actually received this case as a referral from two attorneys out in South Dakota. Those attorneys had learned of a pattern and practice on behalf of State Farm to not pay these benefits, which they believed resulted in State Farm saving hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars over the course of time, albeit $10 at a time. Those attorneys actually sought out people who they had previously represented, knowing that they had State Farm insurance.
So they found her.
Exactly. Once the client was signed up by those South Dakota attorneys, the case was referred to me, and I've litigated it since.
Just curious.
What was the premium cost increase for this benefit for the $10?
That is something that I should know, Your Honor, and I do not remember that. I know I knew that one time. It was not significant, $2.35, something like that. There was some difficulty getting the exact deck sheets. I remember that we had Ms. Pastor's deck sheet eventually. We got it from State Farm eventually, and it would be in the record. But I cannot remember the additional
approximately premium. Approximately $2.50 or something.
Appley may be able to correct me, but as I remember, it's just a vague memory that was the premium.
What I find surprising about your case, I would think that if the driver, the owner of the automobile, would have to ask State Farm for the $10. I wouldn't have to call them up and say, you know, I can't drive my car, it's broken. I'm not renting a car, so I want my $10.
A couple of things on that point, Your Honor. First of all, the notice provision in the policies at issue is a general notice provision that just says that notice must be given of the claim. There is no specific reference to having to make a specific claim for R1 benefits.
This is a separate claim. It's one thing to tell the company I had an accident. It's another thing to tell them I either rented a car, I didn't rent a car, the car is broken, but I can still drive it, or it can't be driven, it's unusable. How would the company know any of those things unless the insured asked for that?
Well, as a practical matter, when the insured called, the company should tell the insured what coverages are available. And in fact, there are documents that I cite in the brief and that are in the record.
Yes, but if you just call up and say, you know, the car is in an accident and I had it repaired and cost this, or I want an adjuster to come and look at the car and give me an estimate. Why would that clue the company to think that this person might have this extra claim? The person's supposed to know what coverage he has, so he'd say, not only is my car damaged, but I can't drive it, and I'm not going to rent a car, so I'd like my $10.
Well, the only thing I can answer with regard to that, Your Honor, is that State Farm expressly recognized that, quote, some insureds may not realize that they have R1 coverage, especially $10 for not renting a car.
Well, that's an internal directive. That's not, that doesn't create an entitlement. They don't tell you in the policy, you don't have to read this, because if you have any problem, we'll tell you, you know, what coverage you have.
Well, they don't tell you in the policy that you don't have to read it. The basis of this claim was that insureds are paying a premium for a very unusual coverage, a coverage that only State Farm offers. People do not understand in the first instance. Everybody understands that if they rent a car, they may get some reimbursement. People do not understand in the first instance that if they don't rent a car...
It's the next sentence in the policy, right? $16 a day if you rent a car, maximum $16. $10 if you don't. So you're really saying people don't read these policies. They just assume they have some rental car coverage.
I'm not saying that people don't necessarily read their policies. I think, as a practical matter, most people aren't familiar with every iota or even most of the general provisions of their automobile insurance.
No, it's basic contract law that you can't plead ignorance of, even though it's realistic, as you say, you can't get a legal benefit by saying I don't read contracts.
Now, I thought it was sort of odd that this car was maybe like a lot of the ones in this purported class, just out of commission for an hour or so.
Yes, Your Honor.
And that anyone would think that, I mean, without even reading the policy, you would think, I have coverage for something like that? I take my car in, I read a magazine while they repair it, and then I make a claim for $10.
It's kind of weird. I'm sorry. It's Ms. Pastor's position that if you do read the policy, and we have some question here as to whether people do, but if you do read the policy, it specifically says that the coverage applies during a period beginning when you drop the car off at the repair shop and ending when the car is repaired. So looking at the plain language of the policy, Ms. Pastor's claim would be covered. That, of course, is the ultimate issue that was never reached.
It says per day, right? That's ambiguous. I thought that was one of your arguments. Or is it their argument? That it's ambiguous?
State Farm has made the argument that per day means that it has to be out for 24 hours. They've never actually said their contract is ambiguous. We both take the position that the contract is unambiguous.
Well, I know. That's the usual silly legal type of argument. Both sides say it's absolutely clear. Well, that must mean it's ambiguous, right?
If
it can't be absolutely clear in two directions.
I think you can look at the document and you can reach the conclusion that it is.
You look at it and you see one thing, they look at it and see the other. What are we supposed to do?
Well, actually, that is not the issue that's necessarily before the court right now, because we're not here on an appeal of a decision regarding the interpretation of the contract.
But it would require, if there was class certification, to go through, make a determination, does a day mean more than 24 hours or less, and then whatever that determination is, you'd have to go individually determine how long each car had been out of commission.
That is the ultimate decision that Ms. Pastor is looking for on a class-wide basis. However, I don't accept the second part of your question, which was part of the basis of the court denial, that you then have an individual, that you have to look individually. Whenever a class action is brought against a corporate entity or an organization, The named plaintiff doesn't know who's in the class. The named plaintiff has no way of knowing who's in the class. The only way the named plaintiff can find out is by searching the records of the insurance company or whomever. And that's all.
How would searching the records find someone similarly situated to a Ms. Pastor who took her car in for an hour? There was no way, because it wouldn't be reported. They wouldn't know that, would they?
Well, if you define similarly situated as taking the car in for 1 hour, I agree that you would not be able to find it. But you can, and State Farm has given us computer printouts of all the people that received an underlying payment, had an underlying claim, and received payment for the claim, but had R1 coverage and did not receive R1 payment.
How do State Farm or anybody know how long these people had an unusable car and didn't rent.
Well, Your Honor, under appellant's interpretation of the contract, whenever the car goes in for repair, it then requires the $10 payment. So there doesn't have to be determination of how long it was out.
But no. But the contract says it has to be unusable.
Unusable. Exactly. And our interpretation of the contract is that when you take the car in to be repaired, it's unusable. You cannot use it while it is being repaired. State Farm wants to take the position that if the car can be driven, then it's usable. But the policy itself says...
That's Judge Evans' question about, you know, your car, you have a minor damage, you go in, it's repaired, you're there for an hour.
Right, and the policy specifically has two different contingencies. When your car can... The coverage applies during a period starting when your car cannot run due to the loss, or if your car can run. And what State Farm wants to kind of say is, well, if it's running, it's usable. But it specifically says, if your car can run, when you leave it at the shop for agreed repairs and ending when it has been repaired or replaced. So you have a running car that goes into the shop for repairs. The question, I guess, then becomes, how long does it have to be in the shop? State Farm wants to say it has to be in for 24 hours. But it is our position that the policy does not say that. The language that I'm quoting from is from page 4 of my brief. I think the most important error that the court made with regard to the denial of class certification was with regard to...
No, it says when you leave it at the shop. In Judge Evans' question, you're not leaving it at the shop, you're there.
Actually, the district court specifically found that the fact that Ms. Pastor waited for the car was not relevant, that the policy did not... That's one of the
few... How could he find that?
It was her, I'm sorry.
It says when you leave it at the shop. You don't leave it unless you leave the shop.
Well, we then have a situation where two people take their cars to two different shops. One for the same repair, and it's going to take 3 hours. One person has to run an errand. So she leaves the shop and goes to the beauty parlor and picks up her kids.
I agree. It shows your position is ridiculous. I agree with that.
The other person waits for the car.
Your position is silly. Right. That shows why it's how silly it is.
Well, I don't agree that my position is silly.
It's silly because what you're saying is, well, yeah, you just go across the street for a donut and then you get $10.
Well, then no, I think you get the $10 even if you wait there.
All right.
But it begs the question, then what does this coverage mean? I mean, we can talk about whether or not what I'm saying is silly.
So
maybe it's silly coverage.
If every member of your class, that is every person who ever had an accident covered by State Farm would be entitled to the $10? What about the people who rented a car?
Oh, no, the people who rented a car would not be paid, and that's why State Farm knows who rented the car and who didn't, because people who rented the car got paid $16.
So you're saying everybody who had an accident, didn't rent a car, gets $10 or $10 times some number of days?
Well, State Farm's position, although it's...
What's your position?
My position is that they get $10 per day. But
no. Do they just get $10, or are we going to have litigation over how many days each person had a car under repair?
They get $10 because State Farm...
You're not answering my question.
I'm trying to, Your Honor.
Do they get just $10?
Just $10.
Or do they get to litigate $10 times some number of days, which they would show the court the car was unusable for?
The only relevant class here will be the people who get just $10 because State Farm is saying that if the car was out for more than 24 hours, they would have already paid them. Now, I have to take State Farm at its word with regard to that.
Just $10 because your class is sort of the under 24-hour people.
Because that's what this distinction in language has come down to.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Moncio.
Thank you, Your Honor.
So, Mr. Pope?
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Michael Pope, and I, along with my partner Paul Cronus, represent the State Farm. I didn't hear a particular phrase mentioned just now, and that is abuse of discretion. This is an abuse of discretion case. It seems to me the district court did the right thing to find this wasn't a class. Let me just point out a couple of little things to remind the court about Mrs. Pastor's claim. She doesn't even remember it, really. She says she thinks it happened in 95. She wasn't sure. She had a small nick. She kept driving the car, so she agrees it was operable. She thinks she took it to a glass shop. She didn't remember whether she reported it to State Farm or not, but she assumes she did based on her past history. As the court has pointed out, she was there less than an hour, whether that's 15 minutes, half hour, or an hour, we're not sure. And State Farm paid for the repair, and she was satisfied with that. As a matter of fact, the record reflects that a couple of months later, she received a mailing from State Farm clarifying this coverage, and she just read it and put it in the file, and again, made no claim at all, and never gave State Farm any information on the question the court has just directed to counsel, namely, how long was your car unusable, if any? Never got any information about that at all. So it seems to me there was no coverage, no claim made for R1 coverage until 10 years later when she got the letter from counsel.
There's no statute of limitations problem?
There's a statute of limitations problem in South Dakota, Your Honor, which is why this case is in Illinois.
What is it, a 10-year statute? 10-year
statute under the contract, sure.
Here?
Yes, sir.
So it was within 10 years?
Yes, Your Honor. Right. But on the other hand, it does show expectation of the parties. There's various issues that could be litigated. But I think the important thing is the district court found the members of the class are not identifiable or readily ascertainable. And this is after discovery and a full briefing on this question. Secondly, individual issues of fact predominate.
Well, what Mr. Moccio says, he knows, it all depends on his under 24-hour, you know, argument, but that State Farm knows everybody who made a claim, you know, because of an accident or something, and who rented a car, and who didn't rent a car, and didn't get the $10, and he wants each of those people to get $10, right? So that's...
I heard his argument, Your Honor. He had discovery. He wasn't able to convince the district court that this is an identifiable class, and the records aren't kept the way counsel would wish they may have been in another situation. He says in his brief, we should be able to produce these things. He didn't show any evidence whatsoever that it exists, and I will tell the court, it doesn't exist. As the district court found, you'd have to go through each claim file and make a determination of whether there was information there as to whether the car was unusable for any period of time, as the court says, maybe 2 days, 3 days, 1 day, whatever. And secondly, to determine that, you'd have to know whether then did State Farm make a payment.
His idea is it's unusable per se if it's been damaged, right?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that his argument?
I heard that argument, yes, Judge.
So then all you have to know was that the car was damaged and that they didn't rent.
Well, that's not really true, of course, because we also know there's a lot of people who say go to State Farm, get their estimate, take the check, and never have the car repaired. So it's obviously not unusable for that whole group of people. There's people that have they're in this kind of a situation, their glass repaired in 20 minutes while they're at work, and their car is not unusable in that sense because the mobile unit comes out right out to the parking lot. There's a lot of different components of this purported
class.
Oh, this
was a glass? This was a glass?
The glass claim, right.
So no. Sometimes they send someone out to replace your...
Yeah, there's a mobile unit that, and particularly in the rural areas, they go out and while you're at work, it just goes right in the parking lot, fixes it up, and it's never really unusable in a logical sense of the term. So the issues of fact really predominate over here, as the district court found, and I would suggest to the court there's no abuse of discretion here, and therefore there's really no choice for this court.
How wide was the coverage on this R1? Do all policies have this?
Well, Your Honor, as you may know, each state insurance director would make a decision about that, and so that's why it didn't come out uniformly, so it came out in different periods of time, but it was relatively widespread among the country, sure.
And what was the amount? Was it around $2?
I think you're right. I don't have that number precise, but it was a fairly small premium. And again, it's a premium more for rental car while you have your cars towed up, you know, tied up for 5 or 6 days. And they threw in this extra thing, well, you know, good enough for you. If you don't rent a car, that's fine. We should do something for you, too, to compensate you for that. But as the court has pointed out, it's a practical matter. If you don't tell me how many days you claim your car was unusable, how do I write the check for 10, for 20, for 30, for 50?
It's unreasonable to expect that the policyholder has no duties either to read the policy or to tell the State Farm claim agent how many days they claim it was unusable.
Is this coverage still offered in policies?
Yes,
you should
yes,
know. And is this 24 hours? Is a day defined as more than 24 hours?
We clarified the coverage, Your Honor.
When was that done?
In 95.
You know what's
odd? That's why I said that was the mailing that Ms. Pastor got about 6 weeks after this event, and she read it and put it in her file and paid no attention again, made no claim that she was entitled to $10 for that half hour, hour she spent at the glass shop.
Oh, just curious. So, but if a person rents a car, he doesn't rent it, you know, at 12:01 a.m. or something like that. So it would always be part of one day and, say, maybe four more days. So suppose he turns it in the fifth day. So you have two part days and three whole days. Would he just get the $48, or would he get 5 days' worth?
There's no one answer to that, Your Honor. I mean, the claims agent is empowered to make a logical decision on that question based on the situation there.
So you could add two half days to make a whole day?
Certainly. But the point is, a half hour, 20 minutes, less than an hour is not a whole day, and it's not the kind of coverage that was intended by anybody, and the record certainly shows that would entitle people to a $10 payment, particularly when they don't even ask for one. So I think the district court did the right thing here and find this case is just unmanageable as a class, and I would ask the court to affirm.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you.
So, Mr. Mochi, your time expired, but we'll give you another minute if you have something more you'd like to say.
Just very briefly, obviously, Your Honor, the coverage was changed to put in the 24-hour requirement between 95 and about 2001, not just 95. And although State Farm wants to say it was clarified, it was changed to now make it 24 hours. With all due respect, the reason I didn't utter the phrase abuse of discretion is because they didn't get the chance. But I believe that, and I wanted to focus my argument on the choice of law, which I believe was an error of law, that is reviewable de novo here, and that if you take a look at the errors that were made, both with regard to the choice of law and the fact that the judge below interpreted having to look in the file to get information as individual issues of fact, and there were no factual findings below as to whether or not this information was there or not, putting the parties in a position where we're making factual arguments, improper factual arguments, to this court about what's in the files and what's not.
Doesn't Mr. Pope have a good argument about the mobile unit?
I don't think you
could actually have your car repaired at a time when you had no use for it, right? It's in the parking lot of your home or your place of employment, and the mobile unit comes and patches up your windshield. And
there's an interesting thing about glass. Many, if not most, of these claims are glass, and glass is paid directly to the repair company, thereby eliminating the issue of whether or not the car was repaired or the person just took the check, which State Farm has not wanted to get into. With regard to the mobile unit, State Farm makes those payments directly and, again, would have records of who had the mobile unit and who didn't. My position, however, Your Honor, is that the mobile unit doesn't matter. And you may call it silly, but my position is that when the mobile unit comes out, for that period of time, you can't use the car. And this is totally far afield,
it's
especially
like locked in a room that you don't want to leave, right?
Well, it's totally far afield for a court of appeals, but I know in my own experience, I've taken my car when my wife could have used it, and I've put it in a parking lot or in my backyard so that they could come out and fix the glass. My car was not usable while they were fixing the glass, whether it was in my backyard or at the shop down the street, and whether I waited there or I went and ran an errand.
Thank you. Well, thank you very much to both counsel.